Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 11th. Big Oil sees upside of climate bill. Small drillers brace for new fees, taxes. The story was written by Jennifer A. Dluhy, Kevin Crowley, and Zara Hirji of Bloomberg. Oil and gas executives from ExxonMobil Corporation to Occidental Petroleum Corporation have been quick to applaud parts of the $437 billion climate, tax, and health care legislation that Congress is poised to pass this week. The enthusiasm for big oil isn't shared by some smaller and independent producers, which pump the vast majority of the crude and gas produced in the U.S. They're bracing for a raft of new fees and taxes, including penalties on leaking methane and much higher payments for drilling on federal land. While Occidental's chief executive officer, Vicki Holub, hailed the Democrats' sprawling bill as very positive, and Exxon's Darren Woods dubbed it a step in the right direction, for many smaller oil producers, there's little in the legislation to like, said Dan Natz, executive vice president at the Independent Petroleum Association of America. The bill, quote, is going to reduce investment, Knotts said. It will cause long-lasting changes to the industry and long-lasting changes to the ability of our guys to get out there, which is all bad, end quote. The clash over the landmark piece of legislation, officially known as the Inflation Reduction Act, underscores long-standing tensions between large public oil companies and their smaller rivals when it comes to federal policy on climate change. By providing hefty tax credits for carbon capture, hydrogen, and biofuels, the bill would help underwrite supermajors' green transition strategies at a time when they're under intense pressure to accelerate investments in clean energy. Smaller oil producers that don't have refining arms or renewable investments are more exposed to provisions that take aim at fossil fuels. Quote, the oil and gas industry is actually many different industries under a single umbrella, said Andrew Logan, a senior director at Ceres, a not-for-profit coalition of investors and companies advocating sustainability. This bill, quote, endorses the vision that many of the large companies have put out around what the transition will look like, he said. Even so, small companies are a big part of U.S. energy production. Independent producers account for 83% of America's oil production and 90% of natural gas and natural gas liquids, according to the IPAA. Trade groups representing small and medium-sized exploration and production companies are making a last-ditch appeal to House leaders and Texas Democrats to block the bill. They warned in a letter Tuesday that it will exacerbate energy supply concerns and have a, quote, negative impact on the oil and gas industry at a time when stability is most needed, end quote. Exxon and Occidental are among the large oil companies that stand to benefit from the legislation's expansion of a tax credit for capturing and storing carbon dioxide emissions from their industrial operations. Both have big carbon capture projects on the drawing board, and the bill would give them more time to claim the incentive, as well as provide a higher credit of as much as $180 per ton for operations that suck carbon dioxide directly out of the air. Conventional carbon capture projects stand to get as much as $85 per ton, up from $50 today. Those credits will be out of reach for some smaller oil companies whose businesses are concentrated on crude production, said Kathleen Sagama, president of the Western Energy Alliance, which represents scores of oil and gas companies. Quote, "We engage in carbon capture as well, but we're not focused on getting a handout for it," she said. "We're focused on getting more crude out of the ground," end quote. And when that ground is leased by the federal government, the process is set to get a lot more costly. The bill would create a non-refundable fee to simply nominate federal land for potential oil leasing, as well as hiking minimum bids for the acreage, rental payments, and royalties on any oil and gas that's extracted from the territory. The new charges are a potential huge hit to independents that have revenue streams tethered to drilling on federal land. Bigger companies with better access to capital, regulatory know-how, and a more diverse array of projects are, quote, "in a better position to ride out some of these problems," said James Lucier, managing director at Capital Alpha Partners, a Washington, D.C.-based research group. Quote, "If Project A slows down because of regulation, you've got Project B, C, and D in the hopper," he said. "If you're a smaller independent working, God help you, in the Rocky Mountains, you may be committed to one project, and if that project slows down, then you're stuck," end quote. Big and small companies alike have raised the alarm about the legislation's plan to impose an initial fee of $900 on each ton of excess methane emitted from many facilities, including wells, processing equipment, storage tanks, and pipelines. Environmentalists say the fee would prod companies to stifle leaks of methane, an especially potent greenhouse gas, slashing methane emissions by roughly a third from 2019 levels by 2030. Is crucial to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, according to an April report from the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Some major oil companies and large independents, such as Diamondback Energy Incorporated and Pioneer Natural Resources Company, already have intensified efforts to detect and fix methane leaks in anticipation of coming Environmental Protection Agency regulations. Others, such as BP PLC and Shell PLC, have cheered on tougher federal rules, going so far as to praise the bill's clean energy investments in an August 5th open letter to Congress with other businesses. Again, the effects of that will be felt unevenly across the industry, borne most heavily by smaller oil producers less able to absorb the costs of methane mitigation programs, and more likely to have a portfolio of older, leakier wells drilled before the government stepped up scrutiny of the emissions. Despite a change in the Senate-passed bill that raises the emissions threshold and potentially shrinks the pool of companies subject to the fee, independent producers are still concerned. Some 15,000 small producers are at the greatest risk, Pioneer CEO Scott Sheffield told Bloomberg Television on Tuesday. Quote, "There will be more pressure on that small mom-and-pop independent," Sheffield said. "It may put a lot of them out of business," end quote. City of Midland sets monthly record for sales tax collection. This story was written by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland reported that the sales tax collection in August is the highest ever recorded in Midland's history. The city showed $6.33 million collected, which not only beat the old record set in May, $5.9 million, but was also the first time a collection of $6 million happened in 1 month. The collection was a 34.5% increase compared to August 2021. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax income from 2 months prior to collection. August collection is based on June sales. The strong month also pushed the fiscal year balance higher than $50 million. In fact, the $53.2 million is not only 24% higher than the same point last year, but also means that the city has already collected more than it projected for the entire fiscal year, $51 million, and more than $10 million greater than fiscal year 2021. There is one more month left in the fiscal year. Should the city collect the same amount as in September 2021, the city would wind up with more than $57 million for the year. However, the city has been on one of the hottest streaks in history when it comes to year-over-year growth. Not only have there been 10 straight months of growth, but they have all been double-digit growth, and all but 2 months have shown growth of at least 20%. Also, fiscal year 2022 has featured 3 months with growth of more than 40% compared to the same month in the previous year. The record for sales tax collected in one fiscal year happened in 2019, $60.3 million. The current fiscal year will finish second, no matter the collection in September. CUD promotes Friday protest of FBI in Midland. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Jenny CUD will protest the FBI on Friday. The former mayoral candidate and Midland businesswoman promoted on her Twitter page Tuesday night that there will be an Abolish the FBI protest at noon Friday outside its local office, which is located at 1004 North Big Spring Street. Quote, "Midland, Texas protest against this tyrannical government. Please share," CUD wrote on her Twitter page. CUD expressed her displeasure with the FBI's raid of former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago, Florida home. The Associated Press stated in a report Tuesday that the search was part of an investigation into whether Trump took classified records from the White House to his Florida residence, according to people familiar with the matter. Quote, "The weaponized Department of Injustice, FBI, just raided President Trump's house," CUD tweeted. Continuing the quote, "This is an illegitimate government in every respect, and I highly suggest no longer abiding anything from them at all. Taxes, regulations, anything. We have a duty to stop it," end quote. CUD pleaded guilty in October to one misdemeanor charge related to her participation in riots at the U.S. Capitol building as part of a plea deal with the federal government. She was sentenced to 2 months of probation and a $5,000 fine.
Hello, this is Michael, reading additional articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, August 11th. Future Hall of Famer Dearen to sign book at Haley Library, from staff reports. Patrick Dearen's new novel, The End to Nowhere, has been released in hardcover by Five Star Publishing. The premier book signing will be from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday at the N.S. Haley Memorial Library, 1805 West Indiana Avenue. Also signing books will be Ben English of Alpine. The End of Nowhere is Dearen's 26th book and 16th novel. It is based on the unauthorized execution of 15 men and boys of Mexican heritage in Presidio County by Texas Rangers and accomplices in 1918 in retaliation for a raid south of Valentine. No solid evidence tied the executed individuals to the Bright Ranch raid of Christmas Day 1917, and no one involved in the mass execution was ever indicted, Dearen said. This was during the Mexican Revolution when emotions and fear were at a fever pitch along the Texas-Mexico border. In a review, Booklist cited Dearen's capable hands in crafting a story that's both tender and tragic. Historical Novel Society observed that Dearen brings the Texas border of that era and actual historic events into life in a way that educates and moves, while Midwest Book Review called The End of Nowhere an inherently engaging read from first page to last. Deeren, a recipient of the Spur Award of Western Writers of America, will also sign copies of many of his other books, including The Illegal Man, his newly revised novel about illegal immigration. On October 19th, Deeren will be inducted to the Texas Literary Hall of Fame. The Reporter-Telegram will catch up with Deeren about his induction in a future edition. For more information, call the Haley Library at 432-682-5785. 1883, A Ranching Origin Story Exhibit Opens in Lubbock, by Mercedes Cordero. Midland fans of the hit Paramount Plus series 1883 will be able to experience life in the 1800s with the new exhibit in Lubbock. The 1883, A Ranching Origin Story Exhibit is open at the Don and Kay Cash Gallery at the National Ranching Heritage Center at Texas Tech University. Admission is free. The exhibit will feature an authentic wagon, a camp setup, hand-beaded Native American props, behind-the-scenes photography, and apparel worn by the show's stars Tim McGraw, Faith Hill, Sam Elliott, and LaMonica Garrett, according to a press release from the National Ranching Heritage Center. 1883, the Paramount Plus series prequel to Yellowstone, follows the Dutton family's move west across the U.S. in the late 19th century, according to a press release. Visitors will also have the opportunity to better understand how people lived across the Great Plains during the era depicted in the show through eight different structures dated 1870 to 1888, according to the press release. The National Ranching Heritage Center, a 27-acre museum and historical park, is located at 3121 4th Street in Lubbock and is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, August 11th, 2022. Community calendar. Community events. Looking for the last bits of summer wherever possible? Woody's Hideaway packs the punch Saturday with its "Hey, Luau, you doin'?" festivities. Party it up with Hawaiian pizza and rolls, specials on summer beers and Malibu drinks, and other tropical-themed fun. The action starts at 2 p.m. at 5701 Starboard Drive, number 5. Dance the night away at Eccentric Brewing Company's Disco Night, Studio 432 Bash. Accompanying the 16 in-house brewed beers on tap, partygoers can anticipate DJ Mikey Ja spinning 70s dance classics, local Scooter Dog Tex food truck serving up hot bites, Izzy's 360 photos capturing the fun, and a $100 door prize for best disco dressed. The blowout kicks off at 8 p.m. and runs well into the evening. No cover charge, but if you want to reserve a VIP table or need directions, call Jamie Eel at 432-934-1055, 1402 Cotton Flat Road. Tall City Brewery closes its summer Agua Fresca series with a Carnaval de Agua Fresca Saturday. Patrons can expect music, food trucks, all three frescas back in action, and a surprise finale. The Mandujano brothers will be selling fresh Pecos cantaloupes and watermelons. The celebration runs from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. at 3303 West Golf Course Road. the annual back-to-school supplies drive hosted by Members Financial Federal Credit Union will run through August 31st, taking donations of all sorts, pens, notepads, crayons, you name it. Contributions accepted Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., and Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 3100 Sunburst Drive. Centennial Park. Music in the Park, The Croakin' Toads, August 19th. Midland Community Theater, Summer Mummers at the Yucca Theater, Friday and Saturday, August 19th and 20th, and 26th and 27th. Museum of the Southwest, Works of Art in the Historic Turner Mansion, Lock-in Thursday. Note, Session 1, ages 4 to 7, Session 2, ages 8 to 12, Session 3, ages 13 and over. RSVP at museumsw.org/events. Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. every Saturday. Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Robert Earl Keene, World Tour of Texas, August 26th. J. Owen House, August 27th. Charlie Crockett, August 28th. Windwalker Farms, Blazin' Targets Registered Shoot, Sunday. YMCA Clay Shoot, August 19th. Martin County Convent Clay Shoot, August 20th. Boy Scouts Clay Shoot, August 26th. Archway Outreach Clay Shoot, August 27th. At the Horseshoe, Aaron Watson and Friends Birthday Bash at the Amphitheater, August 20th. Midland County Fair, August 25th through 28th. Movies in the Park, Luca, August 12th at Centennial Park, 200 West Wall. Movie starts at dusk. Last chance for 2022 Music and Movie in the Park by Morgan Taylor Thomas. After the start of the 2022-23 Midland ISD school year kicked off Monday, city-based summer series are closing shop. Centennial Park will host the last Movies in the Park screening Friday, starting at dusk on the Great Lawn. The 2021 coming-of-age fantasy comedy Luca will close the 2022 season. Starting at 5 p.m., Busy Bee Shaved Ice will be parked at the corner of Wall and Colorado Streets. Bring a blanket or chair, no glass, alcohol, or dogs on the grass. Music in the Park holds on to one more performance, 7 p.m. August 19th at the Stage Pavilion. Closing the season is none other than Midland party band The Croakin' Toads, made up of Zach Nevis, guitar and vocals, Pete Tung, bass and vocals, and Trey Walker, drums and vocals. The trio covers artists such as The Eagles, Maroon 5, The Backstreet Boys, U2, and more, making sure every listener has a song to groove to. Starting at 5 p.m., food trucks will be parked at the corner of Wall and Colorado Streets. Music fundraiser benefiting West Texas Gifts of Hope is Saturday by Morgan Taylor Thomas. West Texas Gifts of Hope will host its annual Cancer Sucks Fest starting at 6 p.m. Saturday at La Hacienda Event Center in Midland, 12600 Texas Highway 191. The nonprofit provides assistance to Permian Basin cancer patients. Its services include a 4-bedroom lodging facility, lunch to patients in the chemotherapy infusion lab, cosmetic enhancements, gas cards, and complimentary taxi and public transportation vouchers, prescription assistance, care packages, durable medical equipment and supplies by request, and dental assistance when needed to receive appropriate medications. This year's musical guests includes Treaty Oak Revival, a 3-year-old Texas country rock crew from Odessa, Amarillo native and pound sign singer-songwriter Kevin Fowler, and nationally recognized and headlining artist Casey Donahue. Participants can also expect food and other festivities. Pre-sale tickets can be found for $40 or $50 at the door. Looking to sponsor? Call 432-614-9284. Sponsor tables include complimentary drinks, merchandise, and banner advertising. Old Lumberyard Tray Days This Weekend by Morgan Taylor Thomas. After many vendors came down with COVID-19, the Old Lumberyard was forced to close its July trade days, according to a post made on Facebook. Nevertheless, a clean bill of health lets this weekend's festivities take place. For those who've never strolled through the dust-covered ground of the Old Lumberyard, expect 3 tin buildings, long in length and large in width, packed with stands, tables, and miniature markets full of junk treasures, homemade items, and antiques and collectibles. Some vendors will be stationed outside the tin areas as well, so don't pass them by. Patrons can also expect food trucks and more, making this monthly event a unique experience. The weather should be sunny and warm, so bring plenty of water and sunscreen for your self-paced shopping experience. The yard runs from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday and noon to 4 p.m. Sunday. No admission is required. 1801 West Industrial. Last Supermoon of 22 to Light Up Tonight's Sky by Robin Bradshaw. The August full moon, also known as the Sturgeon full moon, will be the last supermoon to light up the skies in 2022, according to Farmer's Almanac. Here's a list of sky watcher information headed toward the full moon, such as when to watch, event etymology, and more. The term supermoon is used when the moon is at its closest point to the Earth, also known as its perigee, and offers a larger visual in the night sky, hence the name supermoon. The term was coined by the astrologer Richard Knoll in 1979, according to NASA, and refers to either a new or full moon that occurs when the moon is within 90% of perigee. So why is it called the Sturgeon Moon? The August supermoon is also known as the Sturgeon full moon, and its name is derived from the giant sturgeon located in the Great Lakes and Lake Champlain, as the timing of the celestial event aligns with the peak fishing season, NASA states. How to watch tonight's full moon. The Sturgeon full moon will peak at 8:36 tonight, according to NASA, and will appear full for about 3 days through Saturday morning.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, August 11th. Dusty Ray Land of Midland passed away on Monday, August 8th, after a lengthy battle with cancer. Dusty was born March 1st, 1958, in Snyder, Texas, to Stanford and Juanita Land. He was the sixth of seven children. After graduating from high school, he moved to Midland, where he began his career with the Midland Police Department as a cadet in June of 1976. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, August 12th, at the branch at NPW. Services will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, August 13th, at Greenwood Baptist Church in Midland, with burial following at Greenwood Cemetery. Dusty served in several facets of the police department, including Patrol Division, Detective Division, Administration Division, and Training Division, working his way up the ranks to lieutenant. He retired from Midland Police Department in June 2009 after 33 years of service. He is preceded in death by his oldest daughter, Brandy Land, his parents, Stanford and Juanita Land, his father-in-law, Bobby Howard, and sisters, Judy Sturman and Vicky Sola. He is survived by his wife, Bobby Jo Land of Midland, his son, Robin Bud Land, and wife, Sarah, daughter, Molly Land of Melbourne, Florida, daughter Amanda Smith and husband Houston of Cristoval, Texas, daughter Ashley McClellan and husband Chad, and son Jake Hall and wife Brittany of Midland, mother-in-law Peggy Howard of Midland, brothers Rocky Land of Snyder, Texas, Sandy Land of Mineral Wells, Texas, Barron Land of Arlington, Texas, and sister Pat Shands of Odessa. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Barbara Garrison Whitehead, age 91, of Midland, passed away August 10th. Memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, August 15th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be offered at www.npwelch.com. Liberato Porras Carrillo, age 64, passed away August 5th. Visitation will be on Friday, August 12th, starting at 1 p.m., with a service beginning at 3 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Cremation services have been arranged. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. O'Neill Ryan, age 94, of Midland, passed away August 9th. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, August 11th, at Rest Haven North Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Michael, and I will be beginning the readings of articles published in the Odessa American, Thursday, August 11th. Front page. Board hears safety and security presentation. Safety and security initiatives in Ector County ISD were highlighted during the Board of Trustees workshop Tuesday. Todd Heiner, District Police Chief, has 29 licensed officers and 4 canine officers. Many years ago, ECISD adopted the standard response protocols that has been adopted by the Texas School Safety Center. There is a School Safety and Security Committee. Each school has a threat management team, and a police officer is provided for that campus, Heiner said. He added that this was implemented sometime last year. Visitors must check in and wear visitor badge at all times, and staff must wear IDs at all times. We're also heavily involved in See Something, Say Something through Student Crime Stoppers, Heiner said. All officers trained undergo alert training, the Texas School Safety Center training for active shooter response. Officers provide local active shooter training for other agencies as well. The ECISD police also coordinate emergency management plans with the city and county agencies. The Odessa Police Department, Ector County Sheriff's Office, Texas Department of Public Safety, University of Texas Permian Basin, and Odessa College Police also work together. There's just a lot of response in our own community to the schools that we serve, Superintendent Scott Murray said. Standard response protocol is the training and drills for students and staff for lockdown procedures and is used statewide. Students and all staff are given training. Murray said students are required to use clear or mesh backpacks. There is controlled access entrances, 1,500 video cameras across the district monitored by the police department, and nearly 1,000 portable radios purchased over the last couple of years to make direct contact with police and 911. School barricades are installed on every door capable classroom and school office door and weekly safety audits. Every school is fully alarmed, Murray added. Sometimes we forget that we have a lot in place today to keep our kids safe, he added. There are lots of conversations across the state of what we would do as we think about moving forward. Starting Tuesday, all classroom doors are to remain locked all day, every day. That is a statewide requirement, Murray said. A state-required test was done by the first day of school, Murray said. We have checked every exterior door in the entire system. Any issues they found were passed on to the maintenance department, Murray said. Principals were required to conduct audits as well. Murray said an intruder audit will be conducted in September by the Region 18 Education Service Center. They will attempt to access every campus to test doors and make sure they can't be accessed. The ECISD Police Department will conduct weekly safety checks. Murray said that there were some unusual doors, and they are working with the maintenance department to think through what their options may be. Board member Carol Gregg said part of her concern is getting this information out to parents, as there is a fine balance between getting parents involved and keeping them away. A great many of our parents don't have picture IDs. It's a fairly big deal among a fairly large portion of our community. I think we need to work on figuring out how to make our space more welcoming, Gregg said. She suggested creating an ID just for ECISD that would make it easier to get into campuses if they don't have IDs. Murray said many of the parents understood the measures in place today. There is a balance between creating a welcoming environment and keeping kids safe, Murray said. He added that they are going to lose some of the welcoming environment. Gregg said ECISD needs to make this information available so people know what the district is doing and why. I fully expect more restrictions coming from our state, especially after the legislative session, Murray said. I think we need to be prepared for additional restrictions coming our way. Heiner said social-emotional training comes with the mandated campus training. It's to identify some of those keys and dangerous types of personality traits. That's why it's based on teams and the collaborative effort of the team on that campus, Heiner said. Murray said people can make use of Crime Stoppers. Secondly, we have our own anonymous reporting system over and above Crime Stoppers. Tonight is really about the preventative steps that we're taking to keep someone out of our organization, Murray said. Board member Tammy Hawkins said as a parent, hearing that, she would feel safe. We want them to feel safe taking their kids to school, Hawkins said. Also at the meeting, there was a presentation and discussion of the ECISD bullying reporting and investigation process, a quarterly update on the strategic plan, and human capital presentation. In other business, trustees heard the quarterly update on three elements of the district's strategic plan. First was an update on talent pipelines being developed. A pipeline is a proactive approach to filling future staff vacancies, particularly for high-skilled, hard-to-staff positions. ECISD has created four teacher pipelines with about 130 teachers who have completed or are currently in those pipelines, plus another 90 high school students in Future Teachers of Odessa track, the board recap said. In addition, 29 future principals are being trained for campus leadership through three separate pipelines, and partnerships have been formed with three universities to develop counselors and diagnosticians. Second was an update on high-impact tutoring. Principals chose three virtual tutoring companies to serve students by providing one-to-one attention in reading and math to help students recover the learning loss due to COVID. Students working with these virtual tutors showed tremendous growth during the year through what amounted to 84,000 hours of additional academic support. That did not fall on the school's teachers. A substantial investment of about $6 million in federal ESSER funds, the tutoring companies selected worked through outcomes-based contracts in which they earned more money if the students achieved higher results. Third was the Smart Badge Initiative, which would use radio frequency ID badges to enhance safety, security, and efficiency for students. Bus riders at five schools will pilot these smart badges this year as they scan getting on and getting off the bus. Smart badges can also be used for library books and at lunch, among other uses. Trustees saw a presentation on bullying reporting, the investigation process, and supports offered at schools. This presentation used a fictitious family walking through the process of how bullying is defined, how it is reported and then investigated, and prevention efforts that include school counselors providing support resources for all of those involved. This support can include guidance lessons, conflict resolution, and referrals to outside agencies. In the 2021-22 school year, 238 allegations of bullying were reported, the recap said. Upon investigation, the majority of those resulted in code of conduct violations and appropriate disciplinary action. 37 of them were substantiated and confirmed as cases of bullying. Again, appropriate disciplinary action was taken and counseling supports put in place as needed. New this year, all school staff are being trained in bullying recognition response through Safe Schools. More information is available on the ECISD website. ECISD's Human Capital Department gave trustees a look at ways the district is investing in employees in order to recruit talent and encourage them to reach their full potential. Much of the department's work over the last 2 years has been focused on addressing a shortage of teachers. That has been done through recruiting efforts, creation of teacher certification pipeline programs, strategic staffing, increased pay for teachers, and opportunities to earn additional compensation through efforts like opportunity culture and teacher incentive allotment. At the start of the 2019-20 school year, ECISD faced 351 teacher vacancies. Currently, there are 58, 29 elementary, 29 secondary teacher vacancies in ECISD. More than 400 teachers have been hired for this school year, the recap said. New trustee Dennis Jones took his oath of office. In June, the school board appointed Jones to fill the vacant seat in position 7, previously held by Nelson Minyard. Over the past 17 years, Jones, a private practice attorney, worked as a prosecutor and a judge and was actively involved in the city's truancy program. He also has previous teaching experience at Angelina College and Odessa College. The Honorable Judge Brooke Hendricks administered the oath of office. Being built. Exciting times underway in Balmoray. School District Getting a New Building, New Football Field, and Track by Ruth Campbell, Balmoray. There are a lot of big doings in the Balmoray Independent School District this summer. Although the district had gotten a $75 million bond okayed by 75% of the voters in 2018, construction on its array of new school facilities didn't get going in earnest till about a year ago, and they won't be complete until approximately June 2023. The shutdown with the pandemic had caused a bunch of issues with construction and getting started, so it took a long while to get started, Superintendent John Massey said. Reporting that the district has only sold $49 million of the bonds and is proceeding with that, he said, we're building a pre-K through 12 campus, a new football field, gym, and all that stuff, he added. We have the field and track laid. The track still needs to be painted. Then the stands and lights need to go up. The architect is Claycomb Associates, which has offices in Dallas and Austin, and the contractor is Lee Lewis Construction of Lubbock. Balmoray has about 150 students in pre-kindergarten through 12th grade and about 39 staff members. Since they have remaining bond funds, Massey said they are considering restoring things that were cut. The land values in the district are based on oil and minerals. We're looking to add those back as the values come back. So this summer, we hope to put together some areas we cut out. An ag classroom, an ag shop. We're going to add that back. We're going to add a parking lot back. We're going to add some other things back to the overall program, Massey said. The center portion of the current school was built in 1956. The building had been added onto some years ago, but the core of that building had never been touched. The new school will sit on 76 acres and be all one building. They are replacing the football field, gym, and playground for the young children and putting all new technology in the building. The infrastructure of our school is completely shot. Our plumbing lines are not good. Our electrical, we have issues with that, Massey said. They had a choice. It's either pour a bunch of money into an old building that is not at the 21st century education level that we need for our students to succeed in the world, or build new construction, Massey said. We were very fortunate that a rancher donated the land where we're going to put the school, so we didn't have to purchase any land. We were able to build from pre-K all the way through 12. You get the whole school, not just a portion or a piece of it. This year, the district's total tax rate will be approximately $1.38 per $100 valuation. The bond will bring the debt service rate to 49 cents per $100 valuation, and the maintenance and operation rate, which Massey said hasn't been set yet, will be reduced to 89 cents per $100 valuation. For 2021, the total tax rate was $1.52 per $100 valuation. The interest and sinking rate was 49 cents per $100 because the bond passed in 2018 and design work had started. The maintenance and operation rate was $1.03. Our intent is to have a state-of-the-art school. We designed it so that we will have learning studios built in around our classrooms, and we can have cooperative group learning. We can have in-classroom learning. What we try to do to think toward the future of what our kids are going to look like when they go into the workforce or when they go to college and what that's going to look like. That's the way we designed the school, Massey said. He added that the district was fortunate to be able to build the new school. Our values when I first got here 5 years ago were at the $45 million value property value. Our values this year went to $1.1 billion. It's gone from a very poor school district to having the money to be able to do something and provide back for our kids and our community. It's something we're excited about, Massey said. When he first arrived, Balmoray was a property-poor school district, so they were not subject to recapture under the Robin Hood system, in which rich districts have to give part of the revenues to poor ones. This past year, we had to start paying recapture because our values caught up with us, So we'll pay recapture this year and next year and for the foreseeable future, he added. This past year, they paid about $2.8 million, and this year they are looking at about $5.5 million, Massey said. The M&O part goes for recapture, so that will leave the district with $2.6 million for operations. $36 million Fondery project approved by city. Council also moves to rid city of game rooms, by Kim Smith. Despite a dramatic increase in the price, the Odessa City Council approved by a 4-2 vote a $36 million Fondery Road expansion project Tuesday night. The council also directed the city's legal team to draft a new ordinance that will eventually result in the demise of all game rooms within the city limits. As a result of Tuesday night's vote, the city will widen Fondery Road from a two-lane road to an urban five-lane road from State Highway 191 to Yukon Road. Utilities Director Tom Kerr told the council the construction portion of the project was expected to be around $20 million, but it has since ballooned to $31.5 million, which also increases the amount that must be set aside for contingencies. In addition, design costs have gone up, so the project is now going to cost more than $36 million, Kerr said. Kerr agreed with District 2 Councilman Steve Thompson's assumption that the cost of the project increased dramatically because the area has a large drainage issue that requires a great deal of asphalt and concrete. Those items, along with other construction materials, are currently skyrocketing in price. Altogether, Kerr said the 28-month-long project will require roughly 6,000 feet of concrete culverts. The council agreed to save $600,000 by reducing the size of the project's sidewalks from 10 feet to 5 feet and by using box culverts that have not been certified by the Texas Department of Transportation but still meet required standards. The project will be funded with roughly $5 million left over from certificates of obligation issued in 2013 and 2019, $726,000 in roadway impact fees, and $10.9 million from the city's general fund. Odessa businessman Larry Robinson asked the city council to wait on the project, noting only two contractors bid on it. With the economy in turmoil, he said he expects additional contractors will want to bid on the project in the future. I think the money is totally out of line for the taxpayers. It's weighted towards that side and the country club side and away from the rest of the city. I think it draws too much money and not everybody can live outside their budget, Robinson said. Thompson responded by saying, "Whether you like it or not, our city is growing and we haven't kept up with it." Robinson retorted, "Well, it's not whether we like it or not, it's whether we can pay for it or not." Odessa Development Corporation board member Chris Crow blasted Thompson and the council for even considering the project now. $36 million is asinine in a time when we're trying to figure out how to pay our firefighters and we're trying to figure out how to replace valves for our water system. Fondery Road is not going to pay to hydrate our children. Fondery Road is not going to pay to put out a fire when someone's house in Parks Bell catches fire, Crow said. We've got to get control of our spending one way or another. These pet projects are getting crazy. Mayor Javier Hoven and District 1 Councilman Mark Mata voted against the project. District 4 Councilman Tom Sprawls was absent from the meeting. In other matters, the council directed the city's legal staff to draft an ordinance stating the city will no longer grant business permits to game rooms within the city limits of Odessa. If the new ordinance is adopted, existing game room permits also wouldn't be extended beyond their renewal date. Dan Jones, senior assistant city attorney, told the council the city of Pecos did the same thing in 2018, because the council came to regret allowing game rooms to move into the city beginning in 2014. District 5 Councilwoman Mary Willis asked Hoven, who placed the item on the agenda, to clarify if he wants to eliminate the game rooms because they are illegal or because the businesses are a nuisance. She told her fellow council members she is firmly on the side of law enforcement, but is concerned about putting the city in a precarious position legally. In past discussions, Hoven has said he believes recent appellate court rulings have declared game rooms illegal, and he thought the city would be on firm legal ground to simply seize their eight-liner machines. On Tuesday night, he conceded not everyone agrees they are illegal, but he still thinks the city can eliminate them because they are a nuisance. Hoven said the game rooms are a drain on the city's resources, given the number of police calls associated with them. The city needs to set a standard for the community, he said, noting he has always hated the adage that people go to Midland to raise families but come to Odessa to raise hell. Jones told Willis he can't recall Pecos being sued over their stance, but I would much rather sit here and warn you that we will probably get sued just because we are Odessa. We probably will get sued. Thompson noted $33,000 was recently seized by the Odessa Police Department after undercover officers discovered a game room was handing out cash instead of the fuzzy prizes allowed by law. There's a criminal element in this town that's very disturbing, Thompson said. The councilman said his constituents are screaming all over the place about their dislike of game rooms. Willis said residents all over the city are screaming, but reiterated she wants to make sure all of the city's I's are dotted and T's are crossed when it comes to liability. Realtor Kelly Clark thanked the council for addressing the matter of game rooms. She said she constantly hears from people who say they aren't moving to Odessa because of crime and the education system. Resident Jeanette Valenueva expressed worry that once the game rooms are gone, criminals will have nothing to entertain themselves. She fears they'll turn to breaking into homes and cars. She questioned why game rooms are being treated differently than bars, which also get a number of police calls. Are they attracting human trafficking? Are they attracting the criminality that have happened at the game rooms? We're not going off speculation. We are going off basically what we are being presented as evidence, and the evidence is the constant calls that are occupying our police department, Hoven responded. Villanueva then referenced an April 24th article in which Odessa Police Chief Mike Gerke and Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths both said that although they believe the game rooms are involved in illegal gambling, game rooms are not the top of their priority list. It's not the top 50%. When you look at what we do, we concentrate on violent crimes and things that cause that violent crime. And when you look at homicides and aggravated assaults and that sort of thing in Odessa, you really have two causes. One is narcotics, money, and, you know, crimes of passion. And that's not really something that we're seeing from game rooms, Gerke said at the time. From April 11, 2020 to April 11, 2022, OPD responded to roughly 440 calls to game rooms, and the ECSO had responded to about 120 calls. Reports were only required in roughly 30% of the calls. Traditionally, Gerke said bars have been a much bigger issue for OPD than game rooms, but also noted it all depends on who is operating the bar or the game room. Gerke and Griffiths said some game rooms account for an inordinately high percentage of the calls, but many aren't problematic at all. Jones and other city attorneys are expected to prepare a draft of the proposed ordinance and provide it to the council for its consideration in the near future. In other matters, the council unanimously voted to expand the geographic area eligible for ODC infrastructure grants of up to $200,000 and facade grants of up to $25,000. Unanimously agreed to sign a 2-year, no-cost lease with UTPB for the Jurassic Jungle Sprayground.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.